Welcome to Guerrillapreneur, the Art of Waging Small Business Warfare podcast, teaching Davids how to defeat Goliaths. Now here's your host, Mark Anthony Peterson.
This is Guerrillapreneur, the Art of Waging Small Business Warfare podcast, the podcast for entrepreneurs, startups, and business mavericks. This podcast is brought to you by Sierra Consulting. An idea can launch a business, a strategy can take it global. In this podcast, we teach entrepreneurs how to defeat corporate giants. In the story of David and Goliath, David defeated a much taller and stronger Goliath by not fighting him hand to hand, but by using technology, a slingshot. The slingshot allowed the smaller David to attack from a distance that minimized the advantages that Goliath had over the smaller David. My name is Mark Anthony Peterson. I am a serial entrepreneur and the managing executive at Sierra Consulting, a leading small business strategy and technology consulting firm. I am also the author of the book Guerrillapreneur, Small Business Strategy for Davids Wanting to Defeat Goliaths, which is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and iTunes. During our last podcast, we defined the term guerrillapreneur as a business that integrates sharing and circular loop economics into the business design with the goal of generating incremental profits to invest in disruptive technology. Disruptive technology, I call slingshot technology, in honor of David who defeated Goliath with that ancient innovation. We also talked about Henry Ford, who deployed circular loop economics into his business model when he sold scrap wood from the Model T assembly line as charcoal under the brand name Kingsford. The incremental profits from Kingsford were reinvested in improving Henry Ford's disruptive technology, the assembly line. When a business leader refuses to accept waste as a natural output from a product or a service, they can develop innovations that are not only good for the bottom line, but are also good for the planet. Before we jump into today's topic, let's discuss what's new in Guerrillapreneur News. Guerrillapreneur News, news about the sharing economy and the circular loop economy. First, the Dansville, California-based startup Trove, which offers on-demand insurance only when someone needs it, recently got $25.5 million in Series C funding. Trove collects data on items consumer own, and they store that data in a private online cloud-based vault. Users can then use their smartphone app to swipe to the right to turn on a pay-as-you-go insurance model, which allows them to cover that item for only the period of time they need insurance coverage. Trove generates a to-the-second price for that insurance, and claims can be filed again with that app just by swiping to the right, thus eliminating the need for insurance agents. Claims are handled using a chatbot appealing to young users who prefer not to make a phone call. Second in Guerrillapreneur News, Mercedes-Benz is testing a new concept called Cruve, a car sharing platform that's like Airbnb for cars. With the advent of Uber, a growing number of people are deciding not to own cars. As a result, car companies are scrambling to find new ways to sell their fleets. The Mercedes peer-to-peer program is like Airbnb for cars in that users can loan out their cars to others. Users log their car with the Cruve app and provide such details as model, trim level, photos, availability, price, and location for a handover. Customers seeking a car must also register on the app and must be over the age of 21 and possess a valid driver's license. Customers pick up the car from a designated pickup point and return it to a pre-planned drop-off point. Mercedes is requiring that the vehicles be in good condition and no more than 15 years old. the car owner can optimize the usage of the vehicle and earn money at the same time. And of course, Mercedes makes money by taking a slice out of that rental fee. Interesting concept when you think about Trove that I just mentioned earlier, which lets you buy insurance by the usage, and now you can rent someone else's car by the trip. This sharing economy is taking on a life of its own. Also in Guerrillapreneur news, a report from Grandview Research states that the waste-to-energy market will reach $43.9 billion by 2024. That's up from $25 billion in 2010. The shift is being driven by a surge in waste-to-energy growth from more stringent regulations in Europe and a rapid industrialization of China and India. China Everbright International Limited and Babcock and Wilcox Enterprises are positioned to aggressively take advantage of this momentum by making acquisitions and partnering with municipal solid waste providers. So this whole notion that we talked about in the first podcast of businesses taking their waste and putting them in digesters or using the thermal energy from factories that produce products as a possible source for new energy, that's now becoming a major market, and companies are positioning themselves to turn that into profits. Finally, in Guerrillapreneur news, the Finnish-based clean energy company Fortum finalized an $11 million acquisition of Sweden-based Turi Bergs Recycling AB. Turi Bergs Recycling circular loop economy business focuses on environmental construction, recycling, and processing of bottom ash from waste to energy plants. They also receive combustion residue, treat them, and utilize the clean material as infrastructure construction material. Another important part of their business is separation of metals for reuse. Fortum provides electricity, heating, and cooling, as well as smart solutions to improve resource efficiency. So you can see why that acquisition made sense for them. Now, incredibly, 64% of Fortum's electricity generation is carbon-free. Those are some incredible Guerrillapreneur news updates that show you the sharing and circular loop economy is becoming a bigger part of the business design models around the world. Now, in our last podcast, we promised that we would talk about slingshot technology and discuss how you can develop slingshot technology for your business. Slingshot technology, what is it? Well, first, slingshot technology is disruptive technology. And disruptive technology is technology that displaces an established technology and shakes up the industry. Now, slingshot technology, as I mentioned earlier, is named in honor of David, who defeated Goliath with a slingshot. It shakes up the industry by helping startups and small businesses profitably capture underserved customer segments and deliver products and services at prices equal to or better than the corporate giant. Now, first, I'm going to give you some examples of disruptive technologies. The personal computer, of course, it disrupted the typewriter market and even the playing field in areas of computation. The internet, it evened the playing field for players of all sizes in areas of data aggregation, data management, and data analysis. The cell phone, it disrupted telecom and gave us the ability to make calls anywhere and anytime. The smartphone disrupted dozens of industries. Cameras, watches, MP3 players, personal computers. If you can dream it and put it in an app, the smartphone can deliver it and disrupt an industry. As I mentioned earlier, Trove has launched an app that lets you buy insurance when you need it, swipe to the right, and turn it off when you don't. So the smartphone has become the vehicle that's allowing companies and individuals to disrupt many, many industries. Email and text messages disrupted voice communications. overnight delivery, mail delivery, and even photocopying. So those disruptive technologies certainly shifted the balance of power as they were rolled out into our economy. Are you noticing a theme? These disruptive technologies overlap with everyday tasks that we do over and over again. The carrier pigeon was disrupted by the telegraph. When we think about communications, we had to get a message from point A to point B. The need to get a message from point A to point B never changed, but the delivery mechanism did. The pigeon, the telegraph, and of course, when we moved to computers and emails, the delivery of messages from point A to point B became faster and more consistent. As users integrated disruptive technology into their business model, guess what happened? A new set of needs emerged for the user as demands for their services increased. The pigeon allowed you to get a limited number of messages from point A to point B, but the telegraph allowed you to do it more consistently and at a lower price. When that occurred, demand increased, and so a new set of needs were then brought to bear on the user of that technology. As you can see, you can pull out of just that discussion the key pain points that the user of that technology may have had to suffer with as they implemented it into its business model. The carrier pigeon was not always that reliable, and it could be slow. The telegraph came online, and it was more reliable. It was more instantaneous, but it depended on wired connections and trained individuals to interpret the code. That need model transitioned from speed and reliability to 24/7/365 availability and voice and language communications. The moral of the story is that guerrillapreneurs are constantly building disruptive innovations because they know one breakthrough creates a new set of customer needs that drive more innovation. Here are some examples of disruptive slingshot technology that helped startups overtake giants. First, retail link satellite system. I know most of you are saying, what the heck is that? That was the key to helping Walmart dominate its industry. The target market for Walmart were cost-conscious shoppers. The need for that market was everyday low prices. The status quo, rural customers were being overpriced, and urban customers had become accustomed to frequent discounting. But the segment itself demanded everyday low prices, and they weren't getting it. The market disruption was the retail link satellite system. Why? Walmart believed that if they could replenish items fast enough, it could purchase in larger quantities and pass the savings along to the ultimate end customer. In 1991, when Walmart was still a relatively small player, they invested $4 billion in a retail link satellite system to aggregate data from its stores and improve the efficiency of its supply chain. The retail link system also networked all of its suppliers and provided them with real-time sales and inventory data. By providing this information to its suppliers, Walmart could respond more rapidly to purchase requests and better forecast demand. The cumulative impact of Walmart's investments was a 200 basis point reduction in distribution and shipping costs, a 500 basis point reduction in operating expenses, and an increase in inventory turns above the industry. Walmart had become a big fish in a little pond, and they were ready to take on the giants of their day, Kmart and Sears. Well, of course, once this sort of technology was deployed by Walmart and they dominated small markets in cities of less than 25,000 people, there was no stopping them. Kmart tried to fight back by matching Walmart's low prices. However, Kmart did not have the retail link inventory management system, and as a result, they suffered stockouts and declining profits. In an attempt to save their business, they merged with Sears, but the combined company lacked the skill and technical infrastructure that Walmart had. Kmart is all but gone, and Sears has divested most of its retail and financial services assets. A David in Walmart, which started out as one store when Kmart and Sears almost had 1,000 stores, had defeated the Goliath. A second example of a small company taking on giants is the Wiimote gaming system. The target market for this technology was casual gamers. The customer need, simple but exciting gaming experience. The status quo, the market was focused on high margin, hardcore gaming segments, which demanded complex games and hard to use game controllers. The market disruption technology, the Wiimote. Rationale, casual gamers didn't want to invest hundreds of hours learning a game controller. They just wanted to have an exciting experience. And the Wiimote reflected everyday actions, walking, moving your arms, even dancing on the screen with the simplest of ease. The company, Nintendo. They were the smallest of the three primary game systems on the market at the time. Sony and Microsoft were the other two competitors. Nintendo launched a project called Revolution that will replace their product, the GameCube, and focus on the casual gamer, which happened to be a bigger market in terms of quantity of users, but smaller in terms of dollar size. Revolution was simple, and it was a wireless controller that would detect its position in space. The casual user could use it as a tennis racket, as a sword, and the console would reflect the action on the screen. The sword, which would later be called the Wiimote, was so simple that a child could use it, and the games were so fun that millions of new casual gamers stormed into the market. Nintendo was able to sell its console at a profit to these casual gamers, while Microsoft and Sony had to sell its console at a loss while also making huge investments in games and high definition to retain the hardcore gamers. Nintendo plowed its profits back into its business by providing developers with cheaper software development kits, which encouraged them to make more games for the Wii. By 2009, 504 million Wii games were sold, with 54 of those titles surpassing the million unit mark. That's an interesting story of a David activating an underserved market with disruptive technology and creating a new business that outflanked the Goliaths of its day. The third technology, momentum machines. The target market, fast food gourmet hamburger segment. The customer need, high quality, low cost hamburgers. The status quo, because of labor costs, two primary segments exist: high quality, high cost hamburger franchises and low quality, low cost franchises. The market disruption, momentum machines. Rationale, consumers are demanding higher quality, no GMOs, natural ingredients, but there are some segments that cannot afford it. According to a May 2015 article in Salon Magazine by Martin Ford, Momentum Machines has set out to take on the giant McDonald's by fully automating the production of gourmet quality hamburgers. Momentum Machine devices shape burgers from freshly ground meat and then grills them to order, including the ability to add just the right amount of char while retaining all the juices. The machine, which is capable of producing about 360 hamburgers per hour, also toasts the buns and then slices and adds fresh ingredients like tomatoes, onions, pickles, only after the order is placed. Burgers arrive assembled and ready to serve on a conveyor belt. Momentum Machines believes that these devices will pay for themselves in less than a year and plans to target not just restaurants, but also convenience stores, food trucks, and even vending machines. The company argues that eliminating the labor cost and reducing the amount of space required in kitchens will allow restaurants to spend more on higher quality ingredients, enabling them to offer gourmet hamburgers at fast food prices. That's an interesting and exciting way to disrupt an industry. The highest quality hamburgers available anywhere you want them at any time. Vending machines, convenience stores, possibly even department stores. That's being a guerrillapreneur. Finally, let's talk about my last startup called Pride Rock Holding Company. We were a biometrics company that provided fingerprint services to segments that were required to do screening through the FBI. Our target market for our business was large banks and brokerage firms. The need for those customers were convenient, secure fingerprinting services with near real-time reporting and results management. The status quo at the time was that our customers were sending their employees to police departments to be fingerprinted, and paper cards were being mailed to the FBI. Results were being delivered back in 18 weeks for 3 out of every 10 cards. New cards would be captured for the remaining 7 out of 10 that were rejected. The market disruption technology we deployed outsourced digital fingerprinting and results management. The rationale? Well, 9/11 increased the scrutiny on banks and brokerages and required them to fingerprint all employees before they were hired. If that was the requirement, they couldn't wait 18 weeks to get results. They needed convenience, speed, and a way to manage the results in order to make quicker hires. If they didn't, they would be fined. If they didn't make hires, they couldn't generate a revenue. So they were looking for a solution. In our model, we developed software that allowed us to tap into equipment that was already deployed at UPS stores. We made the software so simple, very minimal training was required. We automated the software so that it would submit and transmit the fingerprint data directly to the FBI. And we built a server to capture the results electronically and deliver those back to the individual HR managers that had requested the employee screening. That replaced a paper-based system that took 18 weeks to get those results back into the hands of those HR managers. Over time, we updated our client app, which was deployed at the UPS stores, with a server-based app, which made the entire process manageable with fewer employees and with greater efficiency. That model disrupted hundreds of small mom-and-pop providers that tried to support these major organizations in their efforts to hire hundreds of thousands of employees. It also gave us the ability to take on the giants, the EDSs of the world, the Lockheed Martins of the world, who previously had developed very lucrative business models selling equipment to these large banks and brokerages and collecting thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars, in maintenance fees to maintain that equipment at the client locations. It's important for small businesses, startups, and entrepreneurs to develop slingshot technology. You have to seek to disrupt your market if you want to keep your market. Let me say that another way. Startups and small businesses that do not invest at least 10% of their profits in R&D will have the privilege of remaining a startup and or a small business. Now, I've gotten you pretty excited with these examples. I know I got excited when I heard about the Momentum machines and the fact that I could possibly have a piece of equipment in my house that could deliver 360 hamburgers an hour. That would be something. I know you're thinking, how do I develop disruptive technology for my industry? Do I have to have this whiz-bang idea that disrupts the industry? Where do I get it? How do I formulate it? Well, I'm going to take you through a 12-step process for developing disruptive slingshot innovations. Now, it's going to give you the ideas. Once you have the ideas, you're going to have to spend even more time developing prototypes and betas to refine it to make sure it works for your market. I'm going to take you through the logic of how I've developed disruptive capabilities and innovations in the past, and hopefully it works for you. Be warned. I'm the king of the 2x2 matrix, and you can be assured that one of these steps is a 2x2 matrix. Also, the entire 12-step process will be posted at Sierra.com. First step, you have to know your target market. And what do I mean by that? You have to have conducted customer segmentation analysis and found a segment that aligns with your strategic plan. In our case, it was mid to large banks and brokerages with more than one hiring center located across multiple states. So those were segments we felt like our technology could add value to because they were big and complex and had a lot of moving parts. Our solution simplified the process and gave them real-time results after we submitted fingerprints. Step two, know the ultimate decision maker. Once you've identified the target market, you have to identify the person or the group that decides to switch from the status quo to your disruptive technology. You have to know what prevents them from switching, every barrier, every internal political reason, and find an answer in your disruptive technology to overcome that so that your solution can take hold in the industry. In our case, the barrier was equipment that was already purchased by the HR department or the security department. In many of these large organizations, they'd spend hundreds of thousands of dollars putting equipment to capture fingerprints in their major markets. If we came in with a solution that outsourced all that, what were they going to do with the hundreds of thousands of dollars they'd already invested? We had to find a way around that problem in order for our disruptive technology to take hold in the industry. Step three, understand the ultimate decision maker's pain points. In our case, the reoccurring task was submitting fingerprints after they were captured to the FBI and getting the results back, sorting them, and dispersing them to the appropriate HR manager. And if you were a large bank, you had many hiring centers, and you had HR managers at every branch that were looking to staff people to work in their particular area. Bigger the bank, the more the confusion. If we understood the steps in that process, how decisions were made, we could architect our solution to minimize costs, improve the workflow, and increase the turnaround time from background check to hire within that organization. Step four, narrow your list of pain points for the ultimate decision makers down to six. Now, you're not going to dream that up yourself. You're going to sit with those customers and they're going to tell you what those pain points are. And you're going to test that over and over again with the target customers until you're certain that you have them in order of priority from one to six. Step five, we're going to create that dreaded 2x2 strategy matrix. So take out a piece of paper. Draw a square on that piece of paper. And next, draw a cross in the middle of the square and make sure that the east and west and north and south tips of the square intersect the sides of the box. If done correctly, you should have four equal size quadrants inside the square. The bottom line of the square is your x-axis, and the leftmost line of the square is your y-axis. Label the x-axis with your top pain point. Label your y-axis with your number two pain point. When we did this for our last startup, we labeled the x-axis convenience and the y-axis real-time results. Step six, we're going to label the upper and lower bounds of the x and y-axis with the remaining four pain points. In our case, we labeled the leftmost point of the convenience axis accuracy. We labeled the rightmost point of the convenience axis simplicity. The bottommost point of the real-time results axis was labeled low cost, and the topmost point of the real-time results axis was labeled instant access. If you followed these steps with your own pain points, you should now have a 2x2 strategy matrix that you can use to brainstorm ideas relevant to each quadrant in the matrix that may disrupt your industry. Step number 7, brainstorm ideas that will fit within each quadrant of your 2x2. Step 8, eliminate ideas that were generated that do not align with your strategy. You're going to have 4 boxes with a lot of great ideas in each one of those quadrants. Eliminate those that you can't support with your strategy. That's going to leave you a smaller list of ideas that you could possibly align with your business. Step 9, estimate the market value of the remaining concepts. You will have to develop a quick and dirty business case to determine each concept's value. We have a 1-page template at crl.com that could help. Step 10, conduct a SWOT, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats analysis on the remaining concepts. Eliminate the concepts with the greatest weaknesses and the lowest market value. We have a SWOT analysis template at crl.com. Step 11. Crystallize the remaining concepts into clear value propositions. This step may seem simple, but it's actually the step that most startups struggle with. So take your time and work to get as clear and concise as possible. Step 12, test the value propositions with your target customers using focus groups and surveys. The best value propositions will be the basis for your first prototypes. That's the 12-step process. Want a copy of this guide? Sign up for our newsletter at crl.com, and by doing so, we will give you access to our document vault where the 12-step guide for creating disruptive concepts is stored. We went through this 12-step process and built a prototype that we tested with a target customer for more than a year at no cost to that customer. In exchange for using our product for free, the target customer agreed to give us detailed feedback on how we could improve our service. After hundreds of hours of documenting and implementing new updates to the service, we finally perfected the product. The target customer, in the end, welcomed a contract to roll out our service across their entire footprint. They were also more than willing to provide a reference to us when we went to sell this product to other target customers. As a startup, we would not have survived a year-long beta test with a Fortune 500 company if we had not integrated a sharing economic model design into our business, which called for us to use UPS store equipment and personnel instead of us investing capital and hiring employees. Which is why I stress the need for entrepreneurs to take that extra step and become a guerrillapreneur. Build your businesses so that you leverage other people's capital, tap into underutilized assets before you start making capital investments. At the point where your business is proven out, that's the appropriate time to make capital investments. Building a business is hard. Disrupting an industry is like dancing with an elephant. Entrepreneurs who are not ready to do this dance may not be ready to call themselves guerrillapreneurs. Thank you for listening to Guerrillapreneur, the Art of Waging Small Business Warfare podcast. If you enjoy this podcast, you may also enjoy my book, Guerrillapreneur, Small Business Strategy for Davids Wanting to Defeat Goliaths. Look for it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and iTunes. Please also follow me on Twitter at Guerrillapreneur, GUERRILLAPRENEUR. Also, check us out online at Cierro.com, CEYERO.com. We have templates for startups and other documents for entrepreneurs. Sign up for our newsletter, and we'll give you access to all of those things that can help give you a head start in getting your business off the ground. I want to close with a quote from the great Chinese military strategist Sun Tzu. Victorious warriors win first and then go to war, while defeated warriors go to war first and then seek to win. Keep fighting, guerrillapreneurs. We'll see you next time.